This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
So tune in to KBOO for 24 hours of special Earth Day programming beginning at 7 a.m. on Monday, April the 22nd.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Yellow Pages, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New mobile applications available for iPhone and Android. For more information, you can visit pdxgyp.com.
And it's also brought to you from a grant by Merrillhurst University's new Bachelor of Arts in Media and Film Studies, where you can explore how media in all forms affect not only how we view the world, but how we shape it. You'll learn the power of media and how you can use that power to become a participant in change. Now accepting applications. Details at merrillhurst.edu/KBOO.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. Thanks for supporting the membership drive. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know, giving you the tools to destroy billionaire rule. First headlines, this from Henry Nyman's Recombinomics.com, titled H7N9 Causes CDC Activation of Emergency Operations Center. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention activated its Emergency Operations Center in Atlanta yesterday to support the response to the H7N9 influenza outbreak in China. That's according to CDC officials in an emailed statement. The EOC was activated at level 2, the second of three levels. Level 1, the highest, signals an agency-wide response. The activation of the Centers for Disease Control, EOC, is not a surprise, although the World Health Organization and the CDC have claimed there was no human-to-human transmission of H7N9 influenza. The first confirmed case, represented by a Shanghai person, was part of a familial cluster. Both sons had severe pneumonia and one died, as well as a geographic cluster. The second confirmed case in Shanghai lived in the same area and was treated at the same hospital. Media reports cited a significantly larger cluster. Moreover, the birds at live markets in the area were H7N9 positive and also had a key receptor binding domain change, which raised the possibility that the birds were infected by humans. Now, I want to interject. This comes in the context of death of thousands of swine, which have been found in the river. Possibility of a recombinant influenza mutation going on in that area. So this is not it's not an emergency at this point. It's not large enough. However, it is interesting in the sense of could be dangerous. And this sort of information is especially interesting to the United States because we remain in the condition imposed by, well, rampant capitalism, especially since the Reagan administration, which has affected hospitals and healthcare as well. Hospitals no longer have much in the way of extra beds. So if we get influenza outbreak in the United States, we're not set up for it. Returning to the text, the key change was the presence of a genome in all three human sequences and absence in all three avian sequences. Moreover, the case fatality rate is at 90%, although many mild cases have not been tested. Therefore, the CDC activation was expected. This is Press Watch. I'm Teresa Mitchell. You're listening to KBOO. The U.S. corporate media has been very helpful in obscuring the fact that it is the full Eagle nuclear war exercises, the joint U.S.-South Korean massive first strike games that have been driving the conflict with North Korea so far. The nature and size of the U.S. effort is effectively hidden. I would say almost no one knows about it, so that it appears that Kim Jong-un is screaming threats for no reason. That's Kim Jong-un now. The effect is similar to the famous Howard Dean scream, in which the crowd that was screaming along with him at a rally was eliminated from the recording so that he appeared deranged. So now we are presented with the image of the lonely middle finger one North Korean missile, Mudong-1, I think it's called, amid speculation over whether it could possibly be armed with nuclear weapons. If it wasn't phallic enough today, the news is that it has been erected. Of course, this thing could not have a nuclear weapon on it, period. Even if North Korea had produced a light enough fission device to load on the thing, there's a matter of years of testing to make it function through the vibration shock and heat of re-entry. The United States has managed to do that sort of thing through the cost of what would, in constant dollars, be trillions and over decades. Special ceramic nose cones, for example, have to be developed to ablate the heat. No, the middle finger one is merely a successful attempt to focus world attention on phallic gestures, and if it were launched with so much as a load of hamsters, it would be shot down immediately by half a dozen U.S. and Japanese counter-missiles, the Patriot. Then Kim Jong-un could go to the cameras and gesture and say, "You bent my Wookiee," and then it's on. I think the U.S. has been wanting such a result. There was talk of dialing down the confrontation, but that was never true, because if the U.S. had desired to de-escalate, it would have been easy to shut down the full Eagle War Games, hello, and end the sanctions. I want to say something else that is maybe a little too obvious, but the threat of war primarily concerns the people of Korea. We continually hear that the North Korean missiles cannot reach the U.S. mainland, as if that were just the end of the story. I mean, that's all well and good, but what about Koreans? Do they just not matter? We're talking about a war on Korea that will kill Koreans. Do we not care? If Koreans North and South are doomed to see their family members torn asunder, dying from artillery and bullets, and who knows what else, are we supposed to believe that Koreans are somehow racially inferior, perhaps, and therefore subject to this sort of wild risk? I remember the racial slurs that were deployed against Vietnamese as a kid, and it was actually a racial slur that was first deployed against Koreans. Word was applied to Vietnamese as soldiers returned to San Antonio's military bases near where I lived. Are we, the American people, to accept some new and equally tragic slaughter by filtering the result through our never-addressed racism? I want to say again, the Korean War is just as worthy of massive protests as any of the U.S. imperial adventures. We must reject the propaganda that presents millions of potential victims as if they were merely one ludicrous puppet demanding a showdown. They are not massed at our borders. We are massed at their borders. This is wrong. This is morally wrong. No war with Korea. No war with Korea. Your comments, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. There have been several articles analyzing what happened in Cyprus, and I think the most relative thing, as far as you and I are concerned, is that what was done in Cyprus, the so-called haircut or the confiscation of bank accounts, is set up to be done in the United States. Furthermore, the bailout on the first dip of what I think will be a double dip depression was done with the Fed, the Treasury, public funds, semi-public arrangements, and actually the worldwide deflation of the dollar. And that can't be repeated. And so in the case of Cyprus, we get a little taste of what's going to happen the next time, which is coming up because the derivatives are still teetering. This is from Ellen Brown, wrote in Wall of Debt blog, published on Alternet. And you can also find this, I think, the same article on globalresearch.ca. Cyprus-style confiscation of depositor funds has been called the new normal. Bail-in policies, that's the word now. This is the thing to remember, bail-in. Bail-in instead of bail-out. That's your money getting taken away. Bail-in policies are appearing in multiple countries, directing failing banks, too big to fail banks, to convert the funds of unsecured creditors into capital. And those creditors, it turns out, include ordinary depositors. Even secured creditors, including state and local governments, may be at risk. Derivatives have super priority status in bankruptcy. And Dodd-Frank precludes further taxpayer bailouts. In a big derivatives bust, there may be no collateral left for the creditors who are next in line. Guess who's next in line? I want to make my own comment that you may perhaps remember that I was here making a big deal over the fact that last year Bank of America put their derivatives in with the FDIC. Now, they are first in line for the FDIC. If when their derivatives gambling busts, the trillions that must be paid out greatly exceed the billions available to the FDIC. Ergo, the FDIC has already been destroyed. Now, if you've got money in a bank and you think that if there's a crash, that your savings are protected by the FDIC, they simply are not. And that's not a conspiracy theory. That's just the way it's all lined up right now. Bank of America gets the trickle that's left, and there will be nothing for you. But what will they do? Well, it gets worse. It turns out that when you put your money in the bank, you don't have the rights to it that you thought that you did. But I'll explain by reading more of this article. Shockwaves went around the world when the IMF, the EU, and the ECB not only approved but mandated the confiscation of depositor funds to bail in two bankrupt banks in Cyprus. A bail-in is a quantum leap beyond a bailout. When governments are no longer willing to use taxpayer money to bail out banks that have gambled away their capital, the banks are now being instructed to recapitalize themselves by confiscating the funds of their creditors, turning debt into equity or stock. That's what you'll get. And the creditors include the depositors who put their money in the bank thinking it was a secure place to store their savings. Ha! Returning to the text, the Cyprus bail-in was not a one-off emergency measure, but was consistent with similar policies already in the works for the U.S., U.K., EU, Canada, New Zealand, Australia. As detailed in earlier articles, too big to fail now trumps all. Rather than banks being put into bankruptcy to salvage the deposits of their customers, the customers will be put into bankruptcy to save the banks. Number to call with your comments or questions. Got questions? 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. Alan Brown writes, the big risk behind all this is the massive $230 trillion derivatives boondoggle managed by U.S. banks. Derivatives are sold as a kind of insurance for managing profits and risks. But as Satyajit Das points out in Extreme Money, they actually increase risk to the system as a whole. In U.S., after the Glass-Steagall Act was implemented in 1933, a bank could not gamble with depositor funds for its account. But in 1999, that barrier was removed. Yes, that was the Clinton administration. Recent congressional investigations have revealed that in the biggest derivative banks, that's J.P. Morgan, Bank of America, massive commingling has occurred between their depository arms and their unregulated and highly vulnerable derivatives arms. Departing from the text again and making my own comments, this is where the FDIC stunt comes in. This is why you don't have the FDIC. But returning to the writing by Alan Brown, under both the Dodd-Frank Act and the 2005 Bankruptcy Act, derivative claims have super priority over all other claims, secured and unsecured, insured and uninsured. In a major derivatives fiasco, derivatives claimants could well grab all the collateral, leaving other claimants, public and private, holding the bag. Once again, I'll depart from the text. Very cautious to say that they could grab all the collateral. They're banksters. Of course, they will grab all the collateral immediately. They're not here for you, for gosh sakes. Returning to the Texas tab for the 2008 bailout was $700 billion in taxpayer funds. That's low-balling it considerably, but anyway, and that was just a start. Another $700 billion disaster could easily wipe out all the money in the FDIC insurance fund, which only has about $25 billion in it. Both J.P. Morgan and Bank of America have over $1 trillion in deposits, and total deposits covered by FDIC insurance are about $9 trillion. According to an article on Bloomberg, in November 2001, Bank of America's holding company then had almost $75 trillion in derivatives, and 71% of that were held in its depository arm, while J.P. Morgan had $79 trillion in derivatives, and 99% were in its depository arm. These whole mega sums are not actually at risk, but the cash calculated to be at risk from derivatives from all sources is at least $12 trillion. And JPM is the biggest player with 30% of the market. Now, once again, to my own comments from that, it's true. The numbers, the bigger numbers are not the numbers that would be yanked out of the market, and yet the bigger numbers are so big that the amount yanked out of the market greatly exceeds the amount that the FDIC can cover. It's that unstable. It's that bad. You've already been screwed. And Thomas is on the line. Number to call, 503-231-8187.
Yes, good morning, Teresa.
Good morning.
Thanks for covering this eminently important but not talked about underpinnings of the economic situation. I was just thinking of today and waking up and hearing, hearing the President of the United States issuing some pronouncement about how he's met the other side halfway, more than halfway, he says, in bipartisan interest. And by golly, he's willing to take cuts to Social Security.
Oh, yes. It's just reasonable. Yeah, just a little back and forth.
The first Democrat president in history to mandate cuts to Medicaid as if Social Security, as if there aren't enough people out there eating cat food on Social Security. Unbelievable. And I would say that, it wouldn't take Nostradamus to see this coming. Back when the Simpson-Bowles phony commission was in the deficit hawking talks began in earnest, and the president began channeling Ronald Reagan a few years ago. I'd say it was pretty clear what was going to go on, and what genius! I mean, you have this sequestration, this false artificial crisis is manufactured. So now, President Obama and crew gets to stand back and say, oh, well, this is all inevitable. See, we really weren't inclined to do this, but we were forced to by exigencies. Outrageous.
This is austerity measures. This is a kick in the butt for the U.S. population. How many years have you put into Social Security? When did you first pay Social Security tax?
Because a lot of my work's been piecemeal and under the table, and for God's sakes, I'm going to have another way of supporting myself. And helping myself in the old age. But anyway, think about this. I guess this is the policy. These are the kind of policies we get when you get a Wall Street and bond market supported Trojan horse candidate.
Yep.
Who comes in and packs his cabinet with J.P. Morgan Chase and Goldman Sachs alumni.
Yes, as a corporate shill, he's so much more acceptable than Bush, but he's still a corporate shill. And, I've paid into Social Security since 1974.
Wow.
And I think that...
I hope you see it. Hope you see any of it.
Well, it's up to us. I mean, really, we absolutely... for a start of a new society, we have to stop these banks.
I use the word hope. I'm sorry. I mean, let's demand that we see it. How about that?
Oh, yeah, because they'll let you hope. They're fine with you hoping for change.
Dreams are free.
You just stand out there and hope for change. Oh, yeah. No, we're going to have to get it. I agree.
Thanks
for your call. And Fran's on the line. Number to call, 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. Hi.
Oh, good morning.
Good morning.
I couldn't agree more with the previous caller. I also heard that clip from Obama this morning. It was outrageous. And, he used the word hope, I believe. Like, I hope that the Republicans will, whatever. I mean, the whole thing is wrong and ridiculous on so many levels. But mainly because, he's not the president who a lot of my liberal friends think he is. And, I'm a progressive, And I just think we are getting a very bad deal.
Well, I think people should be very, very angry about this. I mean, Social Security is a pay-it-forward insurance scheme. It has been very successful. It's very solid. When you hear numbers, it's interesting. They never talk about the interest that is gained by all these trillions of dollars that have gone into the Social Security fund. It is absolutely solid, even with the population changing until 2023. The least little tweak forcing the higher income people to pay their fair share would make it solve it infinitely. And no, what's happening is that Obama, representing the banks, would like to create a bubble by putting that money into the stock market, and there he's nibbling at it here and there, you know. And then he can say it's unstable, and oh my gosh, we might as well try this scheme that Bush wanted to do, to let the stock market eat it, and that would make the billionaires. Well, I guess we're just waiting for the first trillionaire.
Right, and I think too that we need to stop hoping, we need to stop asking, and we need just to do from the bottom up. And just not take it anymore.
I agree.
We have a choice, and we have a lot of choices, and we have a lot of power through the internet as consumers, et cetera, et cetera. But we need to use that power that we have.
Well, and
stop letting AirSat's power control everything that we do and have.
I quite agree. Thank you for that call. Number to call 503-231-8187. Ellen Brown writes, we need a massive outcry demanding no cuts. Bring back the stolen money. As for the IRS, we should be demanding no more audits of ordinary taxpayers. Audit the rich. And there's a reason to audit the rich. Very, very good reason. And the first of those reasons is the offshoring of funds to avoid taxes. And now it has come out that there's more trillions offshore than anyone ever knew. And that has actually caused the financial crisis as well as anything else. Joe is on the phone. Number to call 503-231-8187. Hi, Joe.
Oh, hello.
Hi.
Oh, okay. I didn't know you were, I was coming on next. People need to remember who Zbigniew Brzezinski is. I was all set to vote for Obama back in 2007, 2008, when he first started running. And then I saw him walking side by side with Zbigniew Brzezinski when he was getting ready to do one of his campaign speeches at some small community college back east. And I heard the announcer from C-SPAN announcing, he, like a golf announcer would, and here we see the vice presidential candidate walking with his campaign advisor, Zbigniew Brzezinski. And when I saw that, I was about ready to throw a brick through the television because I went, ah, they've got him too. You know, so this whole political thing, Republican, or I call them Repiglican, or Democrats, is basically just a big hoax, and it's just to divide people. And the same pharmaceutical, petroleum, military, industrial, congressional complex has been running everything ever since they blew Kennedy's top of his head off back in 1963.
Yeah, at least.
So don't believe this hope and change stuff. And I knew Obama was a hoax from about the third week into his campaign. And just luckily that day I happened to be watching C-SPAN, and I saw him walking side by side with Zbigniew Brzezinski, who is he's basically one of the masterminds of the whole. I mean, he's a founding member of the Trilateral Commission, a member of the Council on Foreign Relations.
Oh, yeah, he's an old Cold Warrior, and him being there means war, pretty much.
Oh, yeah. Hey, can you give us a radiological reading today on the background?
I don't have background reading. The latest that I got from Fukushima Diary is that entire tanks of highly radioactive water have been found empty, so there's a huge leak problem over there.
Oh, so, but what about our radiation levels right here today in Portland?
I do not have that.
Okay, if you could, maybe start giving us, just to keep everybody's attention to the danger that is ever present every day.
Yes, I will from time to time, and thank you for that suggestion.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
A massive data dump by the Washington-based International Consortium of Investigative Journalists, working in conjunction with dozens of news organizations around the globe, has exposed the secret files of over 120,000 dummy offshore companies that have been used for years to hide the wealth, most of it ill-gotten, all of it tax dodge, of the world's rich and mega-rich. Let's look at these numbers. The U.S. annual federal budget is $3.7 trillion. In U.S. usage, a trillion is 1,000 billion. The total U.S. economy, largest in the world by far, was $15.8 trillion in 2012. Federal budget deficit that we hear so much about, which is growing by a trillion a year, totals about $16 trillion. This is a lot of money. Now, by comparison, the Philadelphia school system, the fifth largest in the country, is in crisis, with 27 schools being closed down because of a budget shortfall of $304 million. That shortfall is direct result of tax breaks and looking the other way for this offshoring. And this offshoring, how much is it? Well, numbers have been coming out. $32 trillion is one number. We are being absolutely made into paupers, subjected to austerity measures called sequestration, turned against each other, encouraged to look at each other's pitiful salaries with greed, with avarice, with resentment, while the trillions stay offshore. That's how corrupt the U.S. government is at this point. Well, that's going to wrap it up for this week's Press Watch, and there is much more coming up on KBOO Portland, coming up on at 9:30, just right next, a deeper look with Linda Olson Osterlund examining the hunger strike at Guantanamo Prison. Flashpoints at 10, Don Johnson at 11 on Between the Covers, 11:30 Words and Pictures. Stay tuned to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio continues the broadcast of the 2013 Ilahi Lecture Series on Wednesday, April 24th, when we'll broadcast a talk by Catherine Austin Fitz.
Managing member of Solari Investment Advisory Services, Catherine Austin Fitz is also a publisher of the Solari Report. She served as Assistant Secretary of Housing, Federal Housing Commissioner in the first Bush administration, and Managing Director of Wall Street firm Dillon Reed & Co., Inc. Fitz has designed and closed over 25 billion transactions and investments to date and has led portfolio investment strategy for $300 billion of financial assets and liabilities.
Catherine Austin Fitz will be speaking at the First Congregational Church in Portland, and KBOO will broadcast the talk live at 7 p.m. Wednesday, April 24th. More information can be found at kboo.fm/Ilahi2013.
Good morning, and thank you for tuning in to A Deeper Look here on KBOO. I'm your host, Linda Olson Osterlund. Our topic today is the Guantanamo Bay hunger strike. It's entered its third month, with as many as 41 men taking part. The situation is desperate, and protests in support of strikers have broken out at embassies around the world, including in Yemen, where a letter was presented to be taken to the United States government. Activist organizations here in the United States have declared today, April 11th, an emergency day of action to close Guantanamo and end indefinite detention. Their protests planned in Washington, D.C., New York City, and 18 other cities. And there are opportunities for people everywhere in the world, actually, to take action by phoning the White House or signing statements online. I'll talk about that a little bit more later. My guest for today's show is perfect. Her name is Pardis Cabrai, and I hope I'm saying that right. She's the senior staff attorney with the Center for Constitutional Rights, a leading organization in defending the prisoners of Guantanamo. She's the lead counsel for the CCR in Al-Awlaki versus Panetta, a lawsuit seeking accountability for the killing of three Americans in Yemen. She represents men currently and formerly detained in Guantanamo, so has a real intimate sense of what's going on there at Guantanamo Bay. Thanks for joining us, Pardis Cabrai. Is that how you say your name, by the way?
Yes, that is. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. I really appreciate in this important day of action, which your organization is one of the main sponsors of, that you're able to talk with us. Let's start by talking about this hunger strike at Guantanamo Bay Prison Camp. How did it get started? What's going on now? I mean, I know there have been striking
prisoners for quite a while off and on, but what is this particular one?
Sure. Well, I was at Guantanamo last week, actually, and I met with several clients who, along with most of the other men at Guantanamo right now, have been on hunger strike for over 60 days. I think today is the 65th day, actually. This all started in early February. What we had heard was, increasing restrictions at the base in terms of the men's conditions. Things that cumulatively were different from the way things had been years before and that were just making life even more difficult for people who have already been detained for 11 years. So there was a certain kind of lead-up in terms of harsher restrictions, but the trigger point seemed to be searches of the men's Qurans, which they viewed as an act of religious desecration. That should not have been news to the authorities. As you said, there have been protests and strikes in Guantanamo before. Many of them were triggered by acts of religious abuse. There is a history of religious abuse at the prison. In the early years, there were acts like guards throwing the Qurans on the floor, stepping on them, shaving the men's beards as punishment, removing their pants to prevent them from praying. So that's the background here, and it should have been known that an act like searching the Qurans would have been a very serious provocation, and that's literally what seemed to have triggered the strike. We, the attorneys of people still there, have been hearing consistently since February 6th that most of the men at the prison have been on strike. Those reports, the numbers have been disputed by the military. At the beginning, they were saying there were no more than five or six people on hunger strike. There was a complete defense of their actions in terms of searching the Qurans and what led to this all. At this point, even the military is acknowledging that there are over 40 people on strike. There are 11 people, they're saying, being tube-fed. The bottom line is actually the numbers don't matter. It doesn't matter if there are, if most of the men right now are on strike or if, it's the numbers that the military is saying. The point, the background here and what really shouldn't be lost.